So, not to brag, but I'm 2-0 in the Fantasy Feast Eaton League with you guys, the listeners of the awesome Fantasy Feast podcast. There's a lot of different reasons for that. One of those is Evan. One of those is just my vast knowledge. And one of those is ProFootballFocus.com. Using the promo code POD20, you save 20% for all of their fantasy football stuff with PFF Fantasy. You can optimize your draft picks, your waiver wire targets, and your daily fantasy lineups. It's awesome. Join PFF Elite for full access to the new premium stats database and green line game picks. PFF Elite gives you all the performance data you need to make winning picks all season long. Join PFF Fantasy today and prepare to win. Sign up at profootballfocus.com and use promo code POD20 to save 20% on all subscription plans.
It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eaten Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is the Fantasy Feast Eaten Podcast presented by BetOnline.ag. Use promo code PODCAST1. To get a 50% sign-up bonus today, if you have not already, betonline.ag is your online sportsbook experts, and Evan Silva is your fantasy football expert, the Roto World superstar. I can say this, Evan, I don't say this in a mean way. He's got no life. Like, this is what he does. This is his life. He is obsessed, and you can tell by all of the knowledge he's about to drop on you over the next hour or so. It's unbelievable how much research you do, Evan. Check him out on Twitter as well, at Evan Silva. Here's what we do. We give you the breakdown of every relevant skill position player in every game. So you know the context. You can't just look at rankings or even projected points. You need to understand the context, understand what's going on, and make decisions for yourself. And that is exactly what my man Evan Silva lets you do. I'm just a former NFL journeyman lineman that loves being 2-0 in fantasy football so far this year. Let's keep it rolling, Evan. And we'll start with the Browns and the Jets Thursday night football.
So the Browns host the Jets. Tyrod Taylor has taken 10 sacks through two games. You know, the Jets have no pass rush, though. So this sets up as a game where I think Tyrod Taylor can play well. Jets also, they play a lot of man coverage. And as we've gone over throughout the years, running quarterbacks can exploit man coverage because when the defense is in man, the defenders turn their backs to the quarterback, and that can create a lot of space in the middle of the field. So, and that shows up in Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he played the Jets twice last year, and he had good rushing production in both of them, 6 for 35 and a touchdown, 8 for 38 in the next one. So I do like Tyrod Taylor as a two-quarterback league starter, as a sort of desperation streamer, you know, as like a decent DFS play on this one game slate. At running back, Carlos Hyde has been over 19 touches in each of, or been 17 touches or more in each of the Browns' first two games. The Jets have played good run defense, but the workload should be there for Carlos Hyde. The Browns are just refusing again to use Duke Johnson. He has 5 and 6 touches through two games, and Nick Chubb has only played 7 snaps. Carlos Hyde, favored at home, decent RB2 play, you know, not catching passes, but a decent bet for a touchdown, and then he can pay off. David Njoku, 33 scoreless yards through two games. You know, I think that he is ninth in air yards among tight ends. He's just still on that tight end one fringe. You know, not definitely not a confident play, but also not a terrible play. He is getting a lot of opportunity. I mean, 9th in air yards is solid, and he's got 14 targets so far. If your tight end's getting 7 targets a game, that's pretty decent. He just has yet to do anything with it, but it'll happen eventually. Jarvis Landry running 66% of his routes in the slot. He's going to square off with Buster Skrine. Buster Skrine, one of the worst tackling cornerbacks in the NFL, last year missed the six most tackles of any cornerback in the league. And then this year he's already missed 4. And last year he missed 10 all year, and that was 6 most in the league. So now he's already missed 4. So he's off to a really slow start. And Albert Wilson scored a 29-yard touchdown against the Jets last week. I thought that Buster Skrine behind him looked real, real slow. This is a great matchup for Jarvis Landry. The beneficiaries of no Josh Gordon are Rashard Higgins and Antonio Callaway, rounding out the 3 receiver set. Antonio Callaway reminded me, coming out of college, of Santonio Holmes. Super, super talented player. A lot of off-field issues, but we've seen him make big plays in the preseason and in week 2, where he tied the game on a 47-yard touchdown from Tyrod Taylor. I don't think he's going to get big targets necessarily, but he's definitely interesting. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, in leagues where, like, I have 20-man rosters, I definitely want to put him on my bench and see what happens, because he's got serious big playability. Rashard Higgins kind of the opposite, more of a possession guy. On the Jets side, Isaiah Crowell and Bilal Powell remain in a very even timeshare. Last week it was Bilal Powell, 52% of the snaps, 48% for Isaiah Crowell. Isaiah Crowell got more touches, 14, but Bilal Powell only had 10, but Bilal Powell severely outgained him, caught a 28-yard touchdown. I think it's Bilal Powell's a decent flex play in PPR leagues. Isaiah Crowell is a touchdown or bust flex option in non-PPR, and that's about it. You know, tough guys to get excited about in such an even time split. And the Browns have been pretty good in run defense again. They were number 2 in run defense last year, holding running backs to 3.7 yards per carry through 2 games. A little worried about Sam Darnold here, you know, and he has definitely played well for a guy who has been the youngest week 1 starting quarterback in NFL history. He has played very, very well in each of the Jets' first 2 games. But I'm a little concerned here, because this Browns defensive front is nasty with Myles Garrett and Larry Ogunjobi. This is you know, one of the most talented young defensive lines in football. And the Jets really had problems protecting Sam Darnold last week against the Dolphins. And I think that the Browns front is a lot better than the Dolphins. Sam Darnold, low-end QB2. Quincy Enunwa, I think, is the most confident play on the Jets. he has team high 21 targets so far. Next closest is Terrell Pryor at 11. Quincy Enunwa also leads the team in air yards, double-digit targets in back-to-back games. Michael Thomas, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, through 2 games, all have had big box scores against the Browns. Robbie Anderson, really tough to use right now. I mean, he's only got 6 targets through 2 games. He has fewer air yards than Terrell Pryor. I mean, I think that Terrell Pryor is actually just as good, if not better, of a fantasy play right now than Robbie Anderson, just not getting the ball enough. And for on the 1-game DFS slates, Chris Herndon is a guy to keep in mind. Neil Sterling has been the Jets' main tight end, but he's out with a concussion. Chris Herndon, rookie out of the U. The U has a long history of producing very good tight ends. Chris Herndon was excellent throughout OTAs and training camp when he was healthy. Last week saw 3 targets, caught 2 of them for, I believe, 30 yards. He had a bad drop that would have gone for a big play late in the game and kind of almost cost the Jets the win, basically. But he's a guy to keep in mind as a sort of sleeper. We can move on to the next one.
Saints, Falcons. Saints just had to put Andy Levitre on IR, so they're kind of losing the war of attrition. Meanwhile, the Falcons had to put Andy Levitre on IR. They're losing the war of attrition. As for the Saints, kind of ties into what you were just saying about the Jets, Browns. Greg Williams' defense really kept the Saints in check. I mean, they were lucky Tyrod threw that terrible pick over the middle to get more points. Greg Williams, I mean, the Browns' defense has been pretty good so far, and they did a nice job against the Saints. What do you think the Saints do against the Falcons?
Well, I think this game has pretty clear shootout potential. And a lot of times, actually, in recent history, these Falcons-Saints games have not lived up to their shootout potential, because I think that the defenses at those times were underrated. But right now, the Falcons are missing so many critical players on their defense, you know, Keanu Neal and Deion Jones, especially, you know, maybe two of their best three defensive players. And the Saints have not played very well defensively so far. So I do expect this game to live up to its shootout potential. Matt Ryan, you know, the Falcons kind of fixed their red zone performance last week, and that has been an ongoing theme under Steve Sarkisian. But they did some smarter things last week. They got the ball to guys not named Julio in the red zone, and that was good to see. That's going to, you know, make defenses have to account for other guys. And Austin Hooper was the beneficiary of that. And Cal also stepped up for a productive game. I don't think that we're, you know, necessarily trying to chase those points in fantasy, but I think that's a very good development for Matt Ryan, who I feel very confident about as a fantasy start this week. Tevin Coleman had a bunch of chunk runs last week, finished with 125 yards on 20 touches, 64% of the snaps. He is locked in against the Saints. The Saints have been good in run defense so far, but you know, this game's high scoring potential, that usage, that big playability. Tevin Coleman checks every other box. Eno Smith did have 10 touches last week on 30% of the snaps. I would not have expected him to get quite that much usage, but they're going to try to use two backs. Eno Smith worth rostering in deeper leagues. Julio Jones. So, again, I think that Julio can stand to benefit from the Falcons involving guys like Austin Hooper and Calvin Ridley in the long run. And I think that can start here. Marshawn Lattimore, you know, the Saints' number one cornerback, has not been very good so far. Targeted 10 times so far, has given up 8 completions, 80% completion rate for 159 yards and a touchdown. Julio has been very good against the Saints historically. 7 for 149, 5 for 98, 7 for 96, and a touchdown. Those are his last three games against New Orleans. Mohamed Sanu, you know, he is a guy that actually could be hurt by Austin Hooper and Calvin Ridley getting more usage. Just a touchdown or bust guy, has been held below 35 yards in 3 of 4 career games against the Saints since he joined the Falcons a few years ago. On the other side, Drew Brees, I think, is a very confident play. You know, wasn't terrible. He dominated in week one. Wasn't terrible last week because they rallied back late in the game, and he wound up finishing as a top 15 fantasy quarterback. He has historically been very successful against Dan Quinn's defense, over 300 yards in 4 of 6 meetings since Dan Quinn took over. No Keanu Neal and Deion Jones is absolutely huge, and this team's going to be throwing the football because they don't have Mark Ingram, because their feature back is Alvin Kamara. He's more of a receiving-oriented back. Christian McCaffrey had, like, 14 catches last week on 15 targets facing this Falcons defense that has always conceded running back catches, but now he's not in as much of a position to defend and make tackles after those catches. And that really bodes well for Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara can have another huge game, as he has always wont to do. Michael Thomas has started off the wide receiver 1 overall. has 30 targets so far, just dominating targets. That's the thing about the Saints passing offense. You got two guys at the top, Michael Thomas with 30 targets, Alvin Kamara with 18, and then there's a steep drop-off. Michael Thomas has been – another guy has been very successful against the Saints. Scored a touchdown in three of four career meetings with the Falcons, I'm sorry. So, you know, those, they have good cornerbacks in Atlanta, but the Saints know how to scheme the ball to their best player. Ted Ginn, you know, the story is kind of just always going to be the same with him. He's not going to get a lot of volume. He can't. He is capable of ripping a big play, and that's what you're going to need, you know, for him to pay off. I liked Ben Watson as a sleeper. Played him in DFS last week. Gets wide open for a would-be touchdown. Drew Brees misses him. So, you know, and that was pretty much all she wrote. He's got nine targets through two games. You know, he's playing a lot, and his opportunity is okay, and this game does have high-scoring potential. So, you know, for people that are really fishing at tight end, and there are already people doing that, he's definitely not the worst streamer that you could think of. We can move on to the next one.
The next one, Evan, is another Sunday 1 o'clock game, and it is the Denver Broncos with Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman against the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore.
Yeah, Philip Lindsay has been terrific through two games. Looks, reminds me a lot of Warrick Dunn. Small dude. I mean, you know, he's real, real small. He stood out quite a bit in the preseason. You know, I don't think that anybody expected him to be, you know, the Broncos' starting running back essentially by week three, but here we are. You know, I mean, the Broncos certainly didn't. They drafted two running backs and only got him as an undrafted free agent. But he has been quite a success story. First undrafted player in NFL history to have over 100 yards from scrimmage in each of his first two games. You know, he's an RB2 right now. You know, I'm not going to, you know, mince words here on calling him a flex or something. He's an RB2. He has big play ability, and he's getting 15 to 17 touches per game, and he can get more. I mean, he's, you know, there's every reason to believe that he can get more than that, because they still can weed out Devontae Booker. Devontae Booker is still playing like 25 to 33% of the Broncos' offensive snaps, but they can make it a 1-2 punch with just Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, and that's the way I think things are going to be trending. Looks like Ravens are going to be without C.J. Mosley, a stud inside linebacker, perennial Pro Bowler. That bodes well for Philip Lindsay. Royce Freeman, I think, is just a touchdown or bust guy right now, you know, not getting that heavy volume that a lot of people expected. You know, he had eight touches last week. He has one target through two games. Philip Lindsay has more fantasy value than your fourth round pick, Royce Freeman. Case Keenum, you know, he had a big week one in terms of fantasy production. He was a top 10 fantasy quarterback. Last week, they just left a lot of opportunities on the table, and they had two touchdowns overturned, one to Tim Patrick, the Broncos' fourth receiver, the other one to Cortland Sutton, the Broncos' third receiver. And then on a separate drive earlier in the game, Case Keenum threw an interception at the one-yard line. So, you know, that's three touchdowns right there that they could have had that they did not execute. I think that the quality of the Ravens defense right now, I'm just not sure of it, because it doesn't look like they're going to have C.J. Mosley, and their top cornerback, Jimmy Smith, is still out. They played the Bills, who were just a disaster in week one. And then last week, you know, Andy Dalton carves them, four touchdown passes. Tyler Boyd goes off, which bodes really, really well for Emmanuel Sanders. Emmanuel Sanders running 71% of his routes in the slot. Tyler Boyd, of course, is the Bengals slot receiver. Tavon Young is the Ravens slot corner. He's coming off a torn ACL, began his career in very promising fashion, but you know, you suffer an injury, it's you know, sometimes takes you a while to come back. I think Emmanuel Sanders can go nuts. against the Ravens. Demaryius Thomas has been – he's really, really struggled so far. I mean, he's got 81 yards on 21 targets. He's tied for the NFL lead in drops with four. He and Laquon Treadwell are leading the NFL in drop passes. You know, the opportunity has been there. They're throwing the ball to him in the scoring position, so you got to stick with him in fantasy as a wide receiver three play. But I think that Emmanuel Sanders is clearly the Broncos' best option. Case Keenum has targeted Emmanuel Sanders 15 times so far. Emmanuel Sanders has caught 14 of them for 231 yards. They're averaging 15.4 yards every time they just throw the ball to Emmanuel Sanders. Jake Butt got some targets last week, but he's still sharing time with Jeff Hoyerman. I think that Jake Butt is an interesting like dynasty and tight end premium guy, but not quite a streamer. I want to see him playing more. On the other side, the Ravens' backfield has been another even timeshare between Alex Collins and Buck Allen. Now, the games have been influenced by – the usage has been a little influenced by the script of the games, because in the first game, you know, Alex Collins had the fumble. They just wiped the floor with the Bills and were able to rest starters late in the game. And then last week they were playing from behind against Cincinnati. So we don't have like an even script layout to look at with the Ravens. But so far, you know, they're playing a lot of Buck Allen. I think that until we see clear evidence of separation, especially in a tougher matchup like this, the Broncos have been – they were lights out against the run last year. And then this year they've been lights out against the run so far, holding opponents to 3.68 yards per carry. Until we see clear separation, I think that Alex Collins and Buck Allen are both just flex plays. Alex Collins not getting enough targets to consider him like a high floor guy. Buck Allen is. I mean, he's got 13 targets. Alex Collins only has five. They're both just flex options. Alex Collins likely needs a touchdown to hit, and Buck Allen likely needs four, five, six catches to hit. He also can get goal line carries, by the way. He's got more carries inside the 5-yard line than Alex Collins does. Joe Flacco has been productive so far. He did not play as well in the second game, and I think that he is just still, you know, kind of like a mid-range to low-end quarterback two, facing a pretty good Broncos pass defense. Michael Crabtree leads the Ravens in targets, but John Brown leads them by a lot in air yards, 268 to Michael Crabtree's 164. John Brown has also commanded three red zone targets to Michael Crabtree's one. So I think that John Brown, despite being out targeted by two by Michael Crabtree through two games, I think that John Brown is the clear play here. He's going to be playing on the perimeter in this game. And Amari Cooper came alive against the Broncos' perimeter pass defense last week. 10 catches on 10 targets for over 100 yards. They're just not as strong as they have been in years past. You know, Aqib Talib is gone. Bradley Roby, Pac-Man Jones, and Tremaine Brock are their outside cornerbacks, with Chris Harris in the slot. Willie Snead has been surprisingly productive, I think, through two games. But he plays in the slot, and that's where Chris Harris roams. Don't want any part of that. We can move on to the next one.
All right, the next one is the Bengals and the Panthers. Bengals have been pretty awesome so far, but Mixon's out for at least this week with that knee scope. Meanwhile, for the Panthers, I thought Cam, kind of under the radar, played really well on Sunday, gave the Panthers a chance to win that game. I want them to throw the ball to DJ Moore. He showed some juice on that last touch. I want him to get the rock more.
Yeah, and Ron Rivera agrees with you, because he came out and said this week that they are going to play him more. Want to see evidence of it happen in fantasy, or before we start talking about DJ Moore as a fantasy start, but definitely in those 20-man roster leagues, he's a guy to put on the end of your bench. he was the first receiver drafted in April. He definitely deserves more usage. John Brown, Ryan Grant, and T.Y. Hilton have all had pretty good games so far against normally is a solid Bengals secondary. That bodes well for Devin Funchess. Devin Funchess, we talked last week about his splits with and without Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen misses last week. Devin Funchess, 9 targets, 7 catches for 77. And over Greg Olsen's last 4 missed games, Devin Funchess has the 7 for 77, 4 for 16, a touchdown, 5 for 92 and 2 touchdowns, and 5 for 86. He's a strong wide receiver to play week in and week out with that kind of resume without Greg Olsen. Christian McCaffrey also benefited from no Greg Olsen and no Deion Jones for the Falcons. And the Cincinnati defense is kind of similar. This is another defense that has given up a ton of running back passing game production over the years. And so far, they have given up a lot of it's been a defense that is vulnerable to that particular position, and they are without Vontaze Burfict, their best linebacker. So I think it sets up as another high-volume passing game for Christian McCaffrey. Cam Newton, as you mentioned, did play well last week. They weren't like ripping long throws in that game, but he was accurate and he was pretty precise. He completed 32 passes. That was easily a career high. He had never completed 30 passes before in a game in his career. Cam Newton is a fantasy starter every single week. Didn't run as much last week, but that he had 13 rushing attempts in week one, and that will come back for sure. On the other side, I just wanted to mention Ian Thomas, because he played 94% of the Panther snaps last week. He ran 45 pass routes, the second most of all NFL tight ends. He had a terrible drop of a 17-yard touchdown, and he finished with 10 yards in the game. But that playing time is really strong. And so he's kind of a shaky streamer, I think, right now. But that's a lot of playing time for him, and he's a talented dude, and he's going to continue to get opportunities because Greg Olsen is month to month with a refractured foot. Andy Dalton has been outstanding. 6 touchdowns, 1 interception through 2 games, 7.3 yards per attempt, facing the Colts and the Ravens. And over his last 16 games, Andy Dalton, if you just stretch it back to last season, he has 31 touchdown passes and 9 interceptions. So, that's top 8 fantasy quarterback production. No one drafted him. I mean, I'm in high stakes leagues where he isn't even owned. He's on the waiver wire. I'm trying to get him right now. And I would play him this week over Phillip Rivers at the Rams. Joe Mixon, he's out with the knee scope. Giovanni Bernard next in line. When Giovanni Bernard has played 40 or more snaps since Bill Lazor took over as the Bengals offensive coordinator, he's got 16 touches, 30 touches, 17 touches, 17 and 15. So I think it's reasonable to project him in that 17 to 21 touch range. Don't expect to see very much of Mark Walton or Trey Carson. Trey Carson, more of like a fullback special teamer type player. And Mark Walton barely made the Bengals 53-man roster as a fourth-round pick. I think the only reason that they kept him was because they drafted him. He was inactive for weeks 1 and 2, just did not look good in the preseason at all. I did kind of like him at the U, so we'll see what happens, but I'm not expecting very much usage from him. And the Panthers' defense has been just smacked by the run in each of their first 2 games. Cowboys and Falcons, running backs combined to average 5.5 yards per carry against them. It's a very good matchup for Giovanni Bernard, and he's going to catch passes. You know that. A.J. Green, 4 touchdowns in his first 2 games. As we've talked about a lot over the years, he has these crazy home-away splits, and he's on the road here, and his production has been significantly better in road games for whatever reason. I think that he should work James Bradberry, the Panthers' top cornerback, and they are using him to chase number one receivers. Tyler Eifert did not produce last week, but his playing time went way up. 41% of the snaps in week one, 66% in week two, ran 34 routes, his most since week 12 of the 2016 season. Now he's got three extra days to rest because that was a Thursday night game. Facing this Panthers defense does not have Thomas Davis. Last week coughed up six catches for 69 yards and a touchdown on six targets to the Falcons. Austin Hooper, not normally a guy who has big fantasy production. I think that Tyler Eifert is a legit fantasy starter this week and for as long as he stays healthy. John Ross's snaps went down last week. If you include the preseason and the regular season, he's been targeted 17 times, only has five catches, just not getting enough looks. Tyler Boyd has been more productive than John Ross, and he's also outsnapped them 81% to 62% through two games. Neither is particularly exciting, but I mean, if you're deciding between one of those guys, it's Tyler Boyd. We can move on to the next one.
Wow, next game, it's the Giants, and that offensive line, really, really disappointing Sunday night. And the Texans, we knew their offensive line would struggle. Deshaun Watson still was able to put up some numbers, and basically the Giants' offense consists of throwing the ball to Saquon Barkley every play. He's going to break one of these. It's just tough when you throw him the ball at the line of scrimmage and there's four dudes in front of him every time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he looks – yeah, the Cowboys deserve a lot of credit, I think, on that Sunday night game for just gang tackling him. I mean, there were always a ton of dudes around him. They clearly were prepared for that. Like, they were a very well-prepared team on Sunday night. Texans, they, as you mentioned, they have major, major protection issues. And, I had a tweet about this. They have played the Patriots and the Titans. And if you look at the Patriots and Titans pass rush statistics versus their other opponent, every team has obviously played two games. If you look at their pass rush statistics, they have no pass rush, in terms of production in their other game. But then against the Texans, their pass rush production is like best in the league. It's a major, major problem. The offensive line, and you combine it with Deshaun Watson because he holds on to the ball. He's a playmaker. He holds on to the ball. And Andrew Luck was definitely, a part of the problem in Indianapolis. And Deshaun Watson is definitely a part of the problem in Houston, and they're going to have to work that out. But as you mentioned, Deshaun Watson was the quarterback 10 last week in fantasy. The Giants have already given up pretty significant rushing production to quarterbacks. Dak Prescott, 7 for 45 on the ground. Blake Bortles, 6 for 35 on the ground. Deshaun Watson, a better runner than both of those guys. I think he can have a really big game here. And the real difference maker for him last week was Will Fuller. I also did a tweet about this. Will Fuller's statistics in five career games with Deshaun Watson are beyond absurd. And we're going to see Janoris Jenkins on DeAndre Hopkins in this game. Will Fuller is one of my favorite DFS plays this week. I've got him in a couple of season longs, excited to fire him up. Giants number two cornerback Eli Apple also may be out due to a groin injury. Will Fuller looks like he can have a monster game here. I did not use him last week because I just didn't trust him on that hamstring, but he played 82% of the snaps, 8 for 113 and a touchdown, 9 targets. That's everything that you want to see. And they're not getting the ball to anybody else in the passing game. Even Lamar Miller has not been targeted very much. So it's going to be DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller, and I love that narrow distribution of targets. That makes the guys more reliable. Now, Janoris Jenkins was good in the Giants' first game, was not good last week. He got dusted on that Tavon Austin, 64-yard touchdown to begin the game. Cowboys threw at him seven times and gave up completions on all seven plays. So I think that DeAndre Hopkins can get the better of him this week. Lamar Miller, a home favorite against the Giants. The Giants have given up over 130 rushing yards in each of their first two games. I'm still concerned that he could get vultured at the goal line by Alfred Blue, because he did in the first game. But Lamar Miller has six red zone carries. Alfred Blue only has the one. So that's definitely far from a given. Lamar Miller, solid RB2. The Texans defense should really eat in this game. J.J. Watt lining up across from Ereck Flowers is maybe the biggest mismatch that will take place on any football field across the land this weekend. J.J. Watt has been really, really good so far. I looked at his Pro Football Focus grades. They're number 2-3-4 defensive end through 2 weeks, behind only Aaron Donald. So he's got it back. You know, maybe not at his peak J.J. Watt, but definitely an elite 3-4 defensive end who's also going to kick inside. But I hope they just leave him one-on-one the whole game with Ereck Flowers, because that is going to be a massacre. Can't use Eli Manning. Has been bad in fantasy in each of the first two games, and these pass protection issues are going to continue to haunt him. I mean, he's afraid out there, and I really don't blame him. I don't blame him for, you know, being tentative out there and wanting to check the ball down. Because the Giants, you know, they have not put him in position to succeed. I don't think he's got a whole lot left himself. But the offensive line is a major, major issue. And it really goes beyond that. Because Brian Baldinger did a great job of showing this this week, how their, just like their pass protection communication before the snap of the ball is an issue, in addition to their just simple inability to get people blocked. And they lost John Jalapio, their center, who had played well in the first two games. He's out for the year with a broken fibula. So the Giants not catching any breaks, and they won't be on Sunday either. Saquon Barkley, 20 and 25 touches through two games. Outside of the 68-yard touchdown run he had in week one, he's averaging 2.36 yards per carry. That's not his fault. You know, I mean, it's an ugly statistic, but we know it's not his fault. I think he looks really good. He looks like he's about to break a big play almost every time he touches the rock. But the offense is dysfunctional, and hopefully Pat Shurmur can get it figured out. Pat Shurmur, during his time in Minnesota, I thought was one of the best offensive coaches in the NFL. And I think that he, you know, as we move forward, I do think that he's going to get some things figured out. The Texans' biggest defensive weakness is at outside cornerback. And so that gives us some hope for Odell Beckham here. Odell Beckham has 24 targets through two games. He's caught 15 of them, does not have a gain of 25 or more yards. And that's very rare for Odell Beckham to go that long without a big play. I think he can get one here. Jonathan Joseph is 34 at right cornerback, has given up 8 of 11 targets for 72 yards and a touchdown so far. And they had to move Kareem Jackson from free safety to cornerback last week to outside cornerback. He's in the past been a slot cornerback, but he's now their outside cornerback. And that is a definite place where Odell Beckham can eat. I mean, Kareem Jackson wasn't even a very good slot corner back in the day. They had moved him to free safety after they signed Aaron Colvin. He definitely should not be playing on the outside, but they have to play him that there because Kevin Johnson is on injured reserve with a concussion. Evan Engram made it out of last week's game with a productive day, primarily because he scored a garbage time touchdown. He's going to be uneven week to week. You know, he's not the passing game focal point that he was last year. Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley are going to be 1-2 on this team in targets pretty much every week. So it's going to be like Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard kind of going back and forth, I think, for most of the year as complementary producers. Sterling Shepard has the worst matchup in the Giants pass catcher core against Aaron Colvin. We can move on to the next one.
Before we do that, I want to make sure everybody knows there's one place where you guys should be playing daily fantasy: DraftKings, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. Bragging rights and huge cash prizes are available right now. No matter what your skill level is, they have a contest for you. So you don't need to go up against people like Evan. There's different levels you can play at. And there's nothing that makes football on Sunday more exciting than when you get a chance to watch your lineup. You have the app. You check it out. I'm trying to think who I was with recently. They were looking at their app the whole time. Christopher Jackson, one of our Tuck heads. He was on his DraftKings app when we were in Detroit together, checking it out, seeing how he was doing. You can play free with your first deposit to compete for your share of over $2 million in total prizes. Just go to DraftKings.com or download the app today. Use code FEAST to enter a contest for free this weekend with your first deposit and compete for your share of over $2 million in total prizes. That's code FEAST only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details and see Evan for his thoughts on Titans and the Jags. Evan, told you a million times about Keelan Cole, and now everybody knows about him. Now he's a total stud. I saw it when I did that game last year. I knew that dude was good.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, he had, you know, he was fifth in the NFL in receiving yards, or I'm sorry, he led the NFL in receiving yards over the last five games of last season. And, you know, last week with the way that the Jaguars played, I mean, they were more aggressive in the passing game, did not have Leonard Fournette, and they played a little bit more spread. You know, they're using Corey Grant. They're using T.J. Yeldon. These guys can catch passes. Blake Bortles played maybe the best game of his career. I mean, he was excellent. And Keelan Cole bailed him out a couple times with, you know, acrobatic catches. I mean, Keelan Cole, no doubt, is a baller. And the Titans' right cornerback, Malcolm Butler, he's been getting burned, man. I mean, it was Kenny Stills for a 75-yard touchdown in week one. And then last week it was Will Fuller just dusting him. So I liked that for Keelan Cole as well. You know, again, it's – I mean, I think that he is going to be the number one, you know, and we've talked about that since Marquise Lee went down. I think that his consistency week to week could be an issue, but you definitely like him more when Leonard Fournette does not play. I'm not sure if Leonard Fournette is going to play this week. I'm not sure how close he was last week. He didn't practice at all. I know that he was calling himself a game time decision, but you know, they've been very, very productive without him. He's missed four games so far in his career. They've averaged 31.5 points per game. Should they feel the need to rush him back from a hamstring injury, when he's a guy that, you know, he is very much like a downhill kind of straight line, you know, big power back, and, you know, playing through a hamstring injury, that's something to avoid. The Jaguars lost Cam Robinson, their stud left tackle, to a torn ACL, but their backup, Josh Wells, I think, can hold down the fort pretty well. This is a guy that they've been, like, developing for the past couple years. And they signed him to a contract extension. And they gave him, like, a solid restricted tender when he was up for a restricted free agency. So they have liked this dude. I think that they're going to be just fine with Josh Wells. Cam Robinson was developing into one of the better left tackle, or had a chance to develop into one of the better left tackles in the NFL. But I think that they're going to be all right. Blake Bortles, you know, it's not like super chasing points, I don't think, to like him against the Titans. The Titans don't really rush the passer real well. They're not playing well right now in the secondary. Blake Bortles is on that quarterback one fringe. And, you know, if you have a quarterback in Well, especially if Leonard Fournette. If there's no Leonard Fournette, I think that that is the difference maker for Blake Bortles. And obviously he also can run, and that raises his floor and his ceiling. On the other side, I'm not sure what to say because it so much comes down to Marcus Mariota, I guess. I mean, but Marcus Mariota has played really poorly. So, Corey Davis is getting volume. That's good, but he's also going to be going up against, the best pass defense in the NFL. Neither Deion Lewis nor Derrick Henry was productive running the ball. Defenses can really key on that ability to run the ball when Blaine Gabbert is in there. And the way that the Titans were able to pull out that win was pulling out all the stops, basically. They scored a touchdown on a Taywan Taylor screen, which, by the way, can we please get more Taywan Taylor? I mean, for the good of the offense, can we please have more Taywan Taylor and less Tajay Sharp? And then they also scored a touchdown on a fake punt. So not much to like here in fantasy. Jonnu Smith played a ton last week but had no production. That's not surprising with Blaine Gabbert. They need Marcus Mariota to get healthy. They need him to start to take a step forward in this new offense. Their offense is a real, real problem here. And the Jaguars' defense squarely in play. We can move on to the next one.
The next one is the Niners at the Chiefs. Could be a lot of points in this one, Evan.
Yeah, I think that Patrick Mahomes might be like the highest owned DFS quarterback in the history of DFS this week. I mean, everyone is going to play him, and for good reason. 10 touchdowns through two games. And last week, he left two touchdowns on the field. He had Sammy Watkins wide open down the left sideline and just overshot him. And that was for a long touchdown bomb and missed Travis Kelce on what would have been a 27-yard touchdown on a wheel route. So there is still some meat on the bone, which is ridiculous. The athleticism of this offense is unbelievable. Travis Kelce, elite athlete. Tyreek Hill, he's the cheetah. Sammy Watkins, very good athlete, almost looks unathletic compared to the other guys in this offense. Chris Conley, they moved into the slot last week. Anybody who pays attention to the combine knows that Chris Conley is like friggin' Spider-Man. I mean, he has like a ridiculous 43-inch vertical, ran, in the 4.3s at like 6'2", 207. And even on down to their number two tight end, Demetrius Harris, former basketball player, DeAnthony Thomas, their athleticism on this offense is unbelievable. And they're going to continue to rack up points all season long. They're going to have to because their defense is not very good. We forecasted this situation pretty much perfectly entering the year, and I don't think it's going to change. 49ers cornerback Akello Witherspoon has just been getting dusted. And last week it was Kenny Galladay dusting him. And they benched him late in the game. And then in his presser this week, Kyle Shanahan was like, I don't know if we're going to be playing Akello this week. Teams have not been throwing at Richard Sherman's side at all. But these Chiefs receivers move around a lot. And Richard Sherman does not. I think that what we saw from Sammy Watkins was good enough for us to use him as a wide receiver three in a good matchup at home against Kansas City. Florio, Pro Football Talk, made a good point this week that Pat Mahomes is 3-0 as a starter, but all his games have been on the road. And the Chiefs have one of the biggest home field advantages in the NFL. So that's kind of scary if you think about it. Kareem Hunt, I think, is a buy low right now. There is some concern with his passing game usage. Patrick Mahomes is such an aggressive thrower, and he can run, that he's not checking down to Kareem Hunt. And that is an issue. But Patrick Mahomes has not been having like big completion totals either, because every friggin' completion goes for a touchdown. But I think that Kareem Hunt is a guy to target in trades right now because people are probably a little disappointed with him. The 49ers have played pretty good run defense, and they are getting back Reuben Foster, difference maker, from suspension in week three. So it's not a gimme matchup, but being at home, being favored in what should be a high-scoring game, all good things for Kareem Hunt. And, you know, again, I think that he's one of the best buy lows right now in fantasy football. You know the deal with Tyreek Hill. Jimmy Garoppolo, I think, is a tough one here. I'm leaning toward playing him, though, in fantasy, because I think that the matchup is just that good. But going to Arrowhead is always tough. I mean, the Chiefs have allowed over the last 3 years 7 points fewer per game at Arrowhead than as opposed to on the road. So, I mean, the home field advantage there is definitely significant. And, you know, just because the matchup is great, that doesn't mean, you know, there's no guarantees. But I do like the shootout potential of the game. And I do like George Kittle. I would like to see them get back Marquise Goodwin. He really has a big impact on their offense. Dante Pettis got banged up last week. He made a big play early in the game, and then he suffered a knee injury and was kind of in and out the rest of the way. They need back Marquise Goodwin. I mean, he's a difference maker in their offense. Matt Breida had a couple of really big runs last week. And he currently leads the NFL in rushing. I think that he is an RB2 / flex here. He's still not getting as many touches as Alfred Morris. And he's not playing as much as Alfred Morris, but he's got the big play ability. But last week it was Alfred Morris, 16 touches, 47% of the snaps. Matt Breida, 14 touches, 41% of the snaps. I don't think that we're going to see Matt Breida get into the 20-touch range. Wouldn't shock me. I just don't think that we will. Neither of these guys are catching passes, though, and that's a big reason for that is because the 49ers are using Kyle Juszczyk as their third down back. Matt Breida has never caught passes in college or in the pros. He had a ton of drops last year. Alfred Morris has also never caught passes and is not going to be used in the passing game. So that's a concern for those guys' floors. I mean, if the Chiefs light them up, you know, and grab like a 21-0 lead early, which seems very conceivable right now, those guys are not going to be on the field as much. You know, it's going to be Juszczyk out there behind Jimmy Garoppolo. Does look like Eric Berry is going to be back this week, or at least there's been some optimism there. That would be a mild concern for George Kittle's matchup. George Kittle was a bust last week. Really, he only got 4 targets. They were going at him a lot early in the game, but you know they kind of took their foot off the pedal, and kind of leaned on the running game the rest of the way. And no 49er player saw more than 4 targets for the entirety of the game. Pierre Garçon does have a good matchup. I'm just not really in love with Pierre Garçon as a fantasy play. We can move on to the next one.
Next one is Oakland, the Raiders, at the 2-0 Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, Miami is in very good position here to potentially start 3-0 because, as you mentioned, they're 2-0. Now they're at home against the Raiders, who are 0-2 and haven't looked great. They did look much better in their Week 2 game. You know, much more functional as a team in their Week 2 game than they did in Week 1. But, you know, they don't rush the passer. Derek Carr did have a good game last week, and that was promising to see. But, you know, their passing game is still kind of a work in progress. Their run defense has not been good. I think that this game sets up really well for Kenyon Drake. And now Kenyon Drake is... he's only the leader in a committee with Frank Gore. Last week, it was 15 to 10 touches. 15 for Drake, 10 for Gore. Gore played a ton in crunch time. The Dolphins were up in by one score for most of the fourth quarter, and it was a ton of Frank Gore at that time. I thought that stood out to me. But Kenyon Drake did have a touchdown near the goal line from 6 yards out. He has 4 red zone carries. Frank Gore has 2. And Kenyon Drake has 2 carries inside the 10. Frank Gore only has 1. But I think that this can be a breakout game for Kenyon Drake. Raiders have given up 5.8 yards per carry to opposing running backs through 2 weeks. Ryan Tannehill has just been, a game manager, and this is how the Dolphins used him. This is how Adam Gase used him in 2016. He's 9-1 over his last 10 starts, by the way. So this formula definitely works when they can, put it into execution, but it's not going to help us very much in fantasy. It's a good matchup. It's a good position to be in. I think that he can have a fine game, and I would definitely start him in a 2-quarterback league. He's not a terrible streamer, but I don't think you can expect a whole lot of upside from a guy who's, getting 22, 28 pass attempts and, isn't really like, an explosive playmaker. The receiver core, because of this run-first, balanced offense, the receiver core, no one's getting a lot of targets in the receiver core. I mean, Jakeem Grant leads the team through 2 weeks with targets, and he had 7 in the first game and 4 in the second one. So it's just going to be dart throws. Kenny Stills is a dart throw. Danny Amendola is going to need games where, it looks like the pass attempts are going to elevate because he can catch a lot of passes, but he's also got to get a lot of targets, and he's not been getting a lot of targets. He's got 10 targets in 2 games. He does have a good matchup, though. Cooper Kupp, 5 for 59 and 1 in week 1 against the Raiders. Emmanuel Sanders, 4 for 96 on 4 targets. Perfect efficiency there. Those guys are slot receivers for their respective teams. Danny Amendola leads the Dolphins in slot routes with 38. Kenny Stills is 2nd with 21. So I do think that this game sets up well for Kenny Stills. When we can get Kenny Stills in position where he's going to be getting slot routes against a bad team in slot coverage, and we can get him against a team that does not rush the passer so that Ryan Tannehill has time to throw and launch it deep, that those kinds of situations set up well for Kenny Stills. Mike Gesicki has been outsnapped by A.J. Derby in each of the Dolphins' first 2 games, only has 2 targets. They both only have 2 targets. That's a situation to avoid in fantasy. Marshawn Lynch has not gotten it going fully, but the usage has been there. And last week, because the Raiders were able to have a lead for a lot of that game, he had 20 touches. Doug Martin had 8 touches, 25% of the snaps. Jalen Richard, who capitalized on game flow from the negative game flow from week 1, he was nowhere to be found last week. 2 touches, 12% of the snaps. DeAndre Washington could come back this week and make him totally irrelevant. But this is a game that if the Raiders can keep the game close, Marshawn Lynch is going to be in position to get another pretty heavy workload. Dolphins have been really good so far in run defense, though. Held the Titans and the Jets running backs to a combined 3.3 yards per carry. Derek Carr has been the quarterback 27 and the quarterback 21 through 2 weeks. He played a lot better last week than the previous week. The Dolphins have faced the quarterback 29 and the quarterback 23 so far. Just no real reasons to believe that Derek Carr is going to have a big fantasy game this week. I think he's a fine quarterback, too. I would rather play Tannehill than Derek Carr, 1 for 1. Mari Cooper got it rolling last week, 10 catches on 10 targets for over 100 yards. I think he's going to be shadowed by Xavien Howard in this game, and Xavien Howard is a true shutdown corner. I mean, he has been since about midway through last season. So that's a concerning matchup. I think that Amari Cooper is a fringe wide receiver 3 play despite last week's good game. Jordy Nelson, only 8 targets through 2 games, 1 red zone target. That's not going to get it done. Jared Cook leads the Raiders in targets and air yards, and he is facing a Dolphins defense that has given up the 8th most yards to tight ends through 2 games, after getting smashed by tight ends all last year. I think that Jared Cook is a fantasy starter. We're talking about, like, I think I would start him over Tyler Eifert. I think it's pretty close. But those are the kind of guys we're looking at, like, in the back end of the top 12 tight ends. But Jared Cook belongs in that top 12 conversation. Martavis Bryant came back last week, 40% of the snaps, only ran 14 routes. I do not expect him to be a fantasy factor. We can move on to the next one.
All right. Well, we'll keep it rolling, and we'll go to the Buffalo Bills at the Minnesota Vikings. I've told everybody this is the number one survivor pool play I think I've ever seen in my life is the Vikings at home in this game.
I'm not sure we will see a mismatch of this kind of proportion the entire 2018 season. Vikings defense is like a stone lock in DFS. I mean, I don't think I'm going to play a lineup without using them. And look, they're going to be really highly owned, you know, but I'm going to try to beat people in with my other decisions. Like, I'm putting them in every, on every lineup, and hopefully other people will outsmart themselves and play other defenses. Although I do like the Texans this week against the Giants. But I mean, this is, you know, Josh Allen flashes, you know, moments where he, you know, he's a flash player. But he does not have control of the football. I mean, he can't control where it's going to go, unfortunately. And that's a big issue. He holds the ball too long, too. I mean, he's averaging 3.6 seconds to get the ball out. And that's just way too long. And he took 5 sacks last week. And the Vikings, I mean, they should just eat. And doesn't look like, you know, LeSean McCoy, not only does he have fractured rib cartilage, which is actually worse than fractured ribs themselves, he had another accusation recently. So I'm not sure we're going to be seeing him play very much going forward. Marcus Murphy is the guy to pick up in PPR leagues, not Chris Ivory. Marcus Murphy is the guy. He played ahead of Chris Ivory throughout the preseason in week one. He catches passes. Sean McCoy, I think, had 9 catches last week. And Marcus Murphy is a receiving back. He's 5'9", 198. You know, he's a scat back for sure. But I think he can produce. I think he's a really sneaky pickup. I'm getting him. I'm picking him up in both of my high stakes leagues. And he is going to be a factor in PPR. I do not think that Chris Ivory is going to be a factor pretty much at all behind a terrible offensive line on a team that's going to be playing from behind a lot. Minnesota, it's all systems go, you know, and you can try to talk yourself out of it by like, oh, well, you know, how many pass attempts is Kirk Cousins even going to need? How many times are going to even need to throw? That's always overthinking because, you know, they can just – this is a situation where the offense can impose its will on the team that it is playing. And Kirk Cousins has been outstanding through 2 games. I mean, I don't think any quarterback in the NFL has made more tight window throws through 2 games than Kirk Cousins has. He's got an unbelievable receiver core, and they're going up against a defense that hasn't been able to stop anyone in any capacity. They're going to get short fields. You know, they're going to be in position to score a lot of touchdowns in this game. All those guys are big time, you know, fire the cannons. Adam Thielen in particular, he has more air yards than Stephon Diggs. He has 6 more targets than Stephon Diggs. Buffalo slot coverage, and Adam Thielen's playing the slot this year. Buffalo slot coverage is a total disaster. I mean, they opened the season with 4th-round rookie Teron Johnson, small schooler in the slot. He hurt his shoulder. They moved to Philip Gaines last week. Philip Gaines, I mean, you know, people have been making money off Philip Gaines for years. He dislocated his elbow last week. He's going to try to play this week with a dislocated elbow. You know, so I commend him for his toughness, but Adam Thielen should have a monster game in this one, as should Stephon Diggs. I mean, they went with Vontae Davis at right cornerback last week. He quits at halftime. So they're in real, real trouble, and the Vikings should be able to really pour it on them. I was promising to see Kyle Rudolph step up last week. Had 8 targets, 7 catches. Bills have given up the 7th most yards to tight ends through 2 games, even including 55 yards to Virgil Green, a blocker, last week. The Vikings said they've got to move on from Laquon Treadwell. I mean, leads the NFL in drops through 2 weeks, and they need to get the ball more to Kyle Rudolph. We can move on to the next one. Oh, I should mention Dalvin Cook. Keep an eye on the hamstring injury. They were calling it cramps, but this is exactly what you want. At home, favor, you know, massive favor. I mean, they're friggin' Vikings are favored by 17. Perfect situation for a running back, but definitely keep an eye on the hamstring slash cramps. We can go on to the next one.
Next one, Indianapolis Colts. Big win in Washington. They're in Philly to take on Carson Wentz, Jordan Matthews, and the Philadelphia Eagles. Not sure we knew that both those guys would be playing in the game, but they are. I will be there. What do you got on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I will be interested to see. I'm kind of taking it conservatively here with Carson Wentz in his first game back. First of all, this Colts defense, they were awesome in week 2. I did not see that coming, but they kind of sneakily have some talent. Marcus Hunt has become a player off the edge and on the interior on their defensive line. Darius Leonard was the ubiquitous Darius Leonard was everywhere in week 2. And then in the back, you know, Kenny Moore, really good slot corner, and Malik Hooker. So they have, like, some playmakers on every level of their defense. And, I mean, maybe they'll be better than we thought. I don't know. They weren't good in the first game, okay? And they were awesome in the second game. So I'm not, you know, drawing any conclusions, but I'm definitely open to being wrong about the Colts defense. And the Eagles are just – they have been decimated by injury. I mean, definitely – and the Falcons are up there too, but I think the Eagles are the most injured team in the NFL. I mean, Jason Peters could barely play last week. He played, I think, 9 snaps. Mike Wallace already out for the year. They haven't had Alshon. They haven't had Carson Wentz. Darren Sproles missed last week. They lost Mac Hollins. I mean, Jay Ajayi barely played in the first half, and it doesn't look like he's going to play this week. It really puts Corey Clement in a really good spot. Does look like Jason Peters is going to play this week. But especially if no Darren Sproles and no Jay Ajayi, Corey Clement, he played a lot better in the second game than he did in the first game. And he can catch passes. He becomes like a high-end RB2 at home against the Colts. With Carson Wentz, I'm kind of just on the borderline with him. I wish that he had a little bit more in terms of weaponry. I would lean toward playing him, but you know, I think that he's still on that, like, in that quarterback 11 to 14 range. Aguilar is going to have to step up and play a lot outside now. It looks like Jordan Matthews can only play in the slot. So he's going to have to jump right in. I mean, their other receivers, and they cut one of their – oh, DeAndre Carter, who played a ton of snaps for them. Their other receivers are Kamar Aiken and Shelton Gibson. So it should be a lot of Ertz. It should be a lot of Aguilar. I don't like him playing outside as much. You know, it does kind of bother me. But that's the better matchup anyways against the Colts outside cornerbacks because Kenny Moore has been so good on the interior. For the Colts, Andrew Luck still doing the short pass approach. And, you know, it's worked out for them for the most part so far. They could have won that first game, but just kind of let it slip away late. And they went to Washington. They dominated last week. But they are not. And they're not giving up sacks. They've only given up 3 sacks through 2 games, although Andrew Luck has taken 16 hits. That's the 4th most in the league among quarterbacks. And that's, you know, it's look, the dude is a playmaker, and he holds on to the ball in the pocket, and he's looking to make plays. And I don't think they're ever going to be able to get that out of him. But they're not testing deep. And, you know, I think that T.Y. Hilton has the best matchup in their pass catcher core. You can beat the Eagles with wide receivers. I mean, that was the case all last year. And it's been the case so far this season as well. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, DeSean Jackson, Julio Jones have all produced at or well above expectations so far through two games against Philadelphia. Jalen Mills is a problem. Jalen Mills is a liability. And, I mean, he can be beaten. And the Colts need to try to get T.Y. Hilton matched up on Jalen Mills as much as they possibly can. Jack Doyle and Eric Ebron, you know, it's funny because Jack Doyle is getting way more targets, 15-9 for Eric Ebron. But Eric Ebron has scored two touchdowns. And so he has been a much better fantasy producer. Eagles are good against tight ends. They always have been. They have a lot of athleticism in their linebacker core, Nigel Bradham, Jordan Hicks. But, you know, I think that these guys are kind of tough to forecast and sort out. They're both on the tight end one fringe. Ryan Grant, not really looking to play him. He has caught 10 of his 11 targets, but he isn't getting any big play chances, and he has zero red zone targets. We should talk about the RBs. Christian Michael was the odd man out last week with Marlon Mack coming back. I did not think that Marlon Mack looked healthy. He was hobbling quite a bit during the game. He finished with, I'm trying to look it up here, what, something like, 36 yards on 11 touches. And Jordan Wilkins got 12 touches, but he rolled an ankle. Nyheim Hines had an 8-yard touchdown run in the second quarter, but he had four other touches and he lost 3 combined yards on them. And then he didn't really play in the second half at all. So this is a situation to avoid. We can move on to the next one.
Next one is the last one here for part one. It's the Packers and the Redskins.
Yeah, this game has high scoring potential, I think. I mean, and I think that bodes well for Alex Smith as a decent streamer. He did not come through last week. He did have a total over 300 yards, but, you know, you need touchdowns, man, and he did not deliver. I do think that the Redskins have the necessary weapons to be able to attack the middle of the field against the Packers, and that's where the Packers are weakest. But with Jordan Reed, Chris Thompson, you know, that's the way that I think you go after Green Bay, because they're not particularly good at inside linebacker. And they have some shortcomings in the slot and at safety. So I think that Jordan Reed and Chris Thompson are the way to attack this defense. Adrian Peterson was stymied last week by the Colts. Did not expect that at all. Was excited about him, played him a little bit in DFS, and, you know, that did not work out whatsoever. He did have 3 catches for 30 yards, and that's good to see. I mean, he's got 100 receiving yards through two games. You know, that's way above what his, like, Vegas line would have been set at, which it probably would have been, like, 23.5 receiving yards. He's got 100 through two games. That's good to see. But, you know, I think it's a reminder that he's kind of, number one, he's going to need really touchdowns to come through for us. And he's also probably going to be pretty inconsistent. You know, and when they play from behind, which, hey, they could here. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is awesome. And he could come out and grab an early lead. That would be an issue for Adrian Peterson. I think that Chris Thompson is going to be more consistent, and he certainly would benefit when the Redskins fall behind. Josh Doctson and Paul Richardson, you know, predictably not useful in fantasy. Just drop them. They might become factors if Jordan Reed and or Chris Thompson get hurt, but that's what it's going to take. Jamison Crowder, 8 targets through 2 games. You know, just a lot of mouths to feed, man, in Washington, and Jamison Crowder's not getting the ball. And, you know, I think that he's very close to being droppable. I'd probably give him maybe one more week, but, you know, certainly can't be using him. Aaron Rodgers, I thought he looked pretty hobbled. I was a little worried about him early in the game, but he got better as the game progressed. I thought he even had some mobility in the pocket. He ran for a first down. So all that stuff was good to see. This is not an easy matchup. Redskins were top six in pass defense DVOA last year. They can get after the passer a little bit. They have played well so far in pass defense. So, you know, not giving up big fantasy stats. So, you know, no guarantees here for Aaron Rodgers, but it's Aaron Rodgers, and we're going to bet on him, you know, 9.5 times out of 10, and certainly this is one of the 9.5 times. Davante Adams had the tough matchup with Xavier Rhodes, overcame it, and Josh Norman does not move around. So Davante Adams, they're going to be able to keep him away from Josh Norman. Davante Adams, unsurprisingly, already scoring a ton of touchdowns. He's got one in both of the Packers' first two games. Jimmy Graham came alive last week against the Vikings. We mentioned how George Kittle was eating them up in the first game. Jimmy Graham delivered on that last week, and he had a touchdown overturned on kind of a ticky-tack holding penalty. But he had 95 yards. Redskins were really bad. They play a lot of zone. Were really bad against tight ends all last year. And I think this is a good matchup for Jimmy Graham. He's running a ton of routes. I think he looks faster than last year. That wouldn't take much because he looked slow last year. Randall Cobb, you know, I think we're kind of back to him being kind of up and down. He is not getting very many air yards. So he's not getting big play chances. He does not have any red zone targets. So, you know, I think he's just going to be on the wide receiver three/flex fringe for most of the year. He's going to pop up for some big games. You know, that big week one game was one of them. And then Geronimo Allison is going to benefit when the Packers have tougher matchups for Cobb and Adams. This is not really one of them. And I think that Geronimo Allison ends up facing off with Josh Norman the most on the Packers. That takes care of that. Or no, I'm sorry, Aaron Jones back at running back for the Packers. The Packers beat writers think that he is going to eat into Ty Montgomery's playing time more so than Jamal Williams. That makes sense because Jamal Williams is one of the best pass protection RBs in the NFL. You got your quarterback dealing with a knee injury. You need Jamal Williams in there. Aaron Jones was not good in pass protection last year. Jamal Williams, you know, he's going to be a 15 to 18 touch per game player. He's going to need touchdowns to pay fantasy dividends. That's what it's going to take. And he doesn't have any through two games. I understand the frustration. He's a low-end RB2/flex, and that takes care of that.
Good stuff as always, Evan. I love it, and I'm already excited about the late games, the Sunday nighter, the Monday nighter. And I love people that are able to dominate in fantasy football leagues for any different way, right? Might just be listening to Evan, might be stuff I've mentioned before, or it could be SquadQL, the only mobile app you need to crush your friends and rivals this year. SquadQL recommends the best starting lineup for you each week based on your starters, bench players, and free agent pool. Here's what's awesome. It pulls in directly your roster, the free agents, your league scoring system, everything. Whether it's Yahoo, like we use for the Fantasy Feast League, or ESPN, CBS leagues, whatever the case might be, SquadQL truly is your go-to app this fantasy football season. Head to squadql.com to download SquadQL, your all-in-one fantasy football manager. Same dudes that created RotoQL, which is the DFS optimizer that people use, 100,000 DFS players use. You can also download RotoQL for free for both Apple and Android. That'll do it for episode 1 here on the Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast, the show That's so nice. We do it twice. Make sure you are subscribed to this bad boy so you don't miss out on episode number two for the rest of the games with Evan Silva this week. Yeah, that's about it. Please rate and review the show. That helps too. I'm stuffed, at least for now.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.